is a reality. Dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to
who
next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you. Leave you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. You really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people,
what are you trying to prove?
Come on,
Do you really think that the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to? Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah. Talking to my people,
eyes, but you just don't see
what you're living
at. Living like you're living,
living like you're living,
caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams,
yeah.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Talking to my people, yeah. Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you. Leave you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. When what you really want inside can only come from
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they call themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We sashay. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Good morning, family. I hope everyone is well. I hope you're doing fine today. I hope that you are doing all the things you want to do, need to do, have to do, and must do or can do. And I hope the weather is accommodating for you to do all of that. This is Wednesday. That hump day for those who work that 9-to-5 from Monday through Friday. Got to get over the hump. So do that. Continue to strive. Continue to do the best that you can. Whatever endeavors that you partake, whatever endeavors you partake in, do your best. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. On Wednesday evening, Revive with our host, Sister POC. Sister POC, which stands for Proof of Consciousness. I know that's right. And her program is from 8 to 10. All times are Eastern. Her program is Wednesdays, 8 to 10 p.m. every Wednesday right here on timeforanawakening.com. Us Lifting Us on Thursdays from 9 to 11 p.m. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people, with my good friend, Brother DJ, Baba Akima, Baba Kimbizi, and Sister Nanana, and Brother Thurman, Baba Thurman, all good people, and we're all striving, Sister Shay, to make Us Lifting Us a reality for our people, a positive, true alternative from the economic exploitations that we have been under. What it is about, of course, is pulling our resources and doing for self. Us Lifting Us. Ulu. And the Ulu Cafe will be opening soon. So stay tuned for that. I'm going to even broadcast from there, hopefully one day. Time for an Awakening, of course, is on Friday, after my program airs on Friday morning from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. In the evening, Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and the hosts, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. And that is on Fridays from 8 p.m. to 11. They don't put an end time on it because sometimes they go longer, sometimes they go shorter. So, but thereabouts on Friday. And outstanding guests. If you just go online and go to time. No, this is what you do. You get that free app. Tune in on your mobile devices, on your tablet, on your cell phone, whatever. And then just when you in the car, you got your phone plugged up. So it is charging. And then you don't want to hear the local radio or play CDs. Hit that. And then hit Time for an Awakening. Because the stream is consistently bringing outstanding information. Outstanding. On Saturdays, this Saturday, it's SST. SST stands for Saturday Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore, Brother Troy Wilmore, every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. From 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. I'm going to give that a call and chop it up with my brother Troy because, you know, I love to talk about sports. And then Saturday afternoon from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, it is Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. The Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday, is our good sister again, Sister POC with Revive, Proof of Consciousness. Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then on Sunday evening, it's our brother, our good friend, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Time for an Awakening, 7 p.m. on Sunday. And that's the rundown here on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. So give us a listen. As always, you know, I tell you, brothers and sisters, it's always something to talk about. Believe me, it's always something to talk about. Oh, yep. There's always something to talk about. And one of the things is that you can have plenty of material. You can go to, one of my main sources is Atlanta Black Star. I love Atlanta Black Star. Please check out Atlanta Black Star when you go online for outstanding narratives and video streams and all kinds of good topics as it relates to our situation here, not just in this country, but even globally. So check out Atlanta Black Star. I think I'm going to take something from Atlanta Black Star. And that is a piece it says, they had a piece that I saw a couple of weeks ago about black identity radicalism or something to that effect. It's the same thing that they've always done as part of the ongoing COINTELPRO to make sure that seriously strong American African organizations that are conscious and that are Pan-Africanist, that are nationalistic, are disrupted and even destroyed, either from agent provocateurs from within or just an all-out attack like they did the Black Panther Party, you know. So, but you know what white identity is? It's America. It's American as apple pie. The truest form of identity politics belongs to white America, as I like to say, because I don't use the word white to describe Caucasians. I don't use the word black to describe Caucasians. To describe Caucasian. I don't use the word black to describe us. I got distracted there. You know, because we're not black. We're Africans. And one of the problems that I know that I deal with all the time is the fact that we can't come to grips with that. In fact, there's been all kinds of stuff that's been thrown into that mix that is just ugly. Ugly that needs to be dealt with by us. That we need to come to grips and say, this is who we are, and begin to move on that. And I'm hoping that we come to the understanding that we are African people and saying that, yes, we declare at this very moment that we are an African people on the continent throughout the diaspora. Africa won, and now we're going to go ahead and build Africa. I would love for that to happen. But I know there are some of us who don't want to be African, don't want to even want to use the word African. There are even some of us who claim that because, I mentioned this Monday, but it bothered me tremendously that when I heard Dr. Claude Anderson say that, you know, that we're not Africans. That we're something special because of what has happened to our situation here, where somehow you were different and we're unique. No, we ain't. No, we ain't. You know, it's just like when Jimmy the Greek Snyder, who was a handicapper on Vegas, well, because of betting on football is very prominent, he had a a chance to be on the CBS football program, and has a, you know, we do some features, and of course they will always go to the board to say why one team was more favored by points over the other, you know. But he was being interviewed. He seemed like he was at some kind of dinner. It wasn't, and he was being interviewed, and he was talking about American African athletes and why they're better athletes because we bred them that way. We took the big black buck and made it him with the big woman, Amazonian. Yeah, right. No, brothers and sisters. They did. Listen, our DNA is intact. Okay, yes, there's some of us are lighter, light, bright, and damn near white. And some of us are relishing that fact because some of us pass in that fact. But African DNA is strong. African DNA is dominant. The genes are dominant. Caucasian European genes are recessive. They did not breed us this way. We are this way because of who we are genetically. But not only are we good athletes, we're good at any and everything that we apply ourselves to. Whatever that is. But because in this country, there's only some things that we can apply ourselves to, so then we excel in those things that we are, this country is comfortable to seeing us. Because I heard a brother say one time, he said the reason that is because they know that they really, truly, honestly cannot compete. They can't compete. And that being the case, so if we had the opportunity to excel in other areas, then you wouldn't have 95-99% of all the airline pilots being Caucasian male and other professions being strictly Caucasian male or even female. You wouldn't have it. So if those barriers were not there and all things truly being equal, then you would see a different story. But it is what it is. And so that's why we excel in entertainment, because it's safe. We excel in all forms of entertainment. In fact, the richest of us are entertainers, not industrialists, not manufacturers, not business. No. The only other business aside, well, I was going to say is church, but church is entertainment. Yes, the church is entertainment. So, but like I said, I don't use the word white because they ain't white. They're Caucasians. They're Europeans. And let me say this. And let me say this clearly. And I've been saying this for many, many, many years. I don't hate anybody. I hate no one. In fact, I love humanity. I recognize humanity's beginnings. I respect humanity and the different cultures and the different formations of human beings based on adapting to environments which they found themselves into, and the different customs and traditions that began to be developed because of that. I respect that. So I hate no one. But let me tell you what I do hate. Let me tell you what I hate with a passion. I hate a system that is created by one group of people on this damn planet to put themselves in a top position with everyone else at a lower position, with us dark-skinned people at the lowest position, so that everywhere now around the world, people who have dark skin are demonized, are shunned, are relegated to a subservient position, are an outcast or the untouchables, and made people hate the way they look to the point that they're willing to risk death. I'll never forget when I read that article when I was in Ghana with a lady who had some wealth, tried to bleach her whole body, laying in a tub of lye, and died because she wanted to be light. I hate that. And so to me, that's why I don't talk with Caucasians about this, because to me, they don't have a damn leg to stand on. There is no discussion. They have been wrong from the very beginning, and they will always be wrong. And everything that they presented to us was for the benefit, for to maintain, sustain the privilege that they've created for themselves. There is nothing that they have given us that was really any good for us. I mean, and I do mean nothing. And probably one of the worst things they did give us was the religion of Christianity, the way it is formulated. Now, I know there are some brothers and sisters who see a possibility of liberation within Christian doctrine, the liberation theology. Those brothers and sisters who practice that or who believe that, and I know there are some African conscious churches that are Christian. You can go in there, and brothers and sisters in daishikis, they pour in libation like I do every time this program begins. They're drumming, you know. Then they look at the scripture, and they look at the scripture with an African face. There are no pictures of Caucasians anywhere. Even if there was a church that they got, you know. So the reality is that to me, there's nothing that they have given us. Now, we can turn it, flip it, change it around, and maybe something will happen in that way. I don't know. But the reality is there is nothing that they have given us that has been a benefit to us. In fact, it's been demeaning and degrading and dehumanizing, if you really want to look at it. So, no, they are not. No, they are not white. They are Caucasians. And that word, if you know the origin of that word, comes from the Caucasus Mountains, because they use it as dividing that range of mountains that separate the eastern part of Asia to the western part of Asia, that separate, you know, Mongolia, China, Russia, da-da-da-da, you know, the other parts of like India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, all that. So they separate that mountain range, the Caucasus Mountains separates that. And so the arrogance of the Caucasians, because west of that, they say that's a continent. That's the continent of Europe. Nowhere in anybody's definition, unless you want to change the definition, is Europe a continent. But because of their arrogance and they're just so full of themselves and the boldness of who they are, I say it's a continent. I say it. It's just like European, I don't know if you want to pronounce it hegemony or hegemony. Whatever how you want to pronounce it, the bottom line is this. To Europeans, what's theirs is theirs, and what's yours is theirs. What's theirs is theirs, and what's yours is theirs. That's their mindset. So, the truest form of identity politics belong to, and when I do say something, I use what they are as the noun. So if I'm talking about Caucasians or Europeans, they'll be American European, just like we are. What we should be called is not African Americans. No, we are American Africans. Africa is the noun. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. That's what a noun describes. A person, place, or thing. And we are the person. We are the noun. Africa is the place, and that is the noun. And what goes in front of the noun, of course, is the adjective, which describes the noun. So we are American African. We are Cuban African, Jamaican African, Ghanaian African, Nigerian African, British African, French African. We are African, just like they Caucasians, they Europeans. So American Europeans is what they is. And they could be French, Russian, Italian. Well, if they're Russian, they're not Europeans. But they're the same folks. That's why I ain't tripping on this Russia thing. To hell with this Russia thing. In fact, it's a damn shame that America, the many elections that America has, the many elections that America has rigged for other countries and despots. I mean, please. I'm not saying that you should not find out if this election that just took place back in November is. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's like the hypocrisy, the hypocriticalness of the situation. That's what I'm talking about. A bunch of damn hypocrites. In this country, America means Caucasian, European, white. Everybody else has to be hyphenated. Quote from Toni Morrison, Nobel Prize winner. And you know, I'm still a little mad at Toni Morrison because, you know, she was the one that BS about Bill Clinton being the first black president because he was on Arsenio Hall's show with some shades on playing the saxophone. And to her, she did apologize for that, from my understanding. She did. I'm sorry about that one. Yeah, well, hey, it's all good, my sister. Recently, the killings of four U.S. soldiers in Niger. I don't know where this Niger came from. I don't know who started that. If somebody knows about that, who's began to pronounce it like that? I don't know if people from Niger pronounce it Niger, you know, but hey. The story became one about current command in chief's response to the deaths. During his condolence calls to the widow of Sergeant LaDavid Johnson, Trump told Ms. Johnson that her husband knew what he was signed up for. Maisha Johnson reported that Trump's dismissive tone and failure to remember her husband's name caused her to cry in anger. The Johnsons are not the first Gold Star family that Trump has feuded with publicly. After the parents of Captain Han spoke at the Democratic National Convention in 2016, Trump took to Twitter to claim that Kazar Han, the fallen soldier's father, viciously attacked him. Though Sergeant Johnson and Captain Han both volunteered to serve in this nation's military and both made the ultimate sacrifices, their families were not treated with respect. Indeed, though, they claim to be patriotic. Trump and many of his supporters do not see his actions as disrespectful. The fact that Sergeant Johnson was American African and Khan was an American Pakistani might explain the inconsistency. Legally, according to the 14th Amendment, every person born in the U.S. is an American citizen. However, Americans that are not Caucasian know that this principle holds a better in theory than in practice. In reality, non-Caucasian Americans, citizens, are seldom viewed as truly American. In study after study, researchers have found that most Caucasians believe the ideal American is exactly white. And why is this so? Dr. Terry DeVos, professor of psychology at San Diego State University, has written or co-authored several articles on this phenomenon. His paper, America Equals White, studied the connections between a person's culture. I don't use the word race. There is no race. There's no such thing as race. There's only one race, if there is a race, and that is the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. There are cultures. And what the Caucasian or European has done has imposed his culture on us. So it's culture. There's no such thing as race. His paper, America White, studied the connection between a people's culture and that person's perceived Americanness. Participants were tested for both conscious and subconscious bias. No matter the method, the test showed that overall, American Africans are not viewed as Americans by Caucasians. American Africans are not the only group affected this particular type of racism. Latinos and American Asians are also viewed as less American than Caucasians. In fact, according to Dr. Voss, Latino and Asians are the two groups most strongly excluded, followed by American Africans. Latinos and Asians are treated as perpetual foreigners and often ask questions as, why are you really? Where are you really from? Or complimented by speaking perfect English. Oh, you're very articulate. When asked to explain these findings, DeVos stated, there is a form of mental hierarchy regarding who is seen as a true American. The numerical status of these groups, majority versus minority, their social status, who is more valued in society, their relative economic and power, political power, the length of immersions of these groups in American society are factors probably contributing to this phenomenon. These factors also consistently favor Caucasians. Moreover, he noted that these associations are windows into the structure of a society that remains categorized by strong inequalities in terms of power, status, and representation. What individuals see and pick up in their daily experiences being immersed in this society will tend to foster a conflagration of Caucasianness and Americanness, DeVos said. Noted that the implicated America equals Caucasian affects us quite strong, robust, and pervasive. It's quite strong. America equals. It is very strong, robust, and pervasive. To illustrate, he said, even a well-known American actress such as Lucy Liu is sometimes seen as less American than a Caucasian foreigner such as Kate Winslet. These findings show that the Caucasian link is so deeply ingrained that we cannot eradicate it even when our conscious beliefs say otherwise. So not on your conscious, nor your subconscious beliefs, because you have been so impacted. You have been so indoctrinated. The failure to see non-Caucasians as full Americans has real ramifications for non-Caucasians in politics and policy. Caucasians who feel threatened by non-Caucasians gaining freedom, power, authority, or autonomy seems to turn to slogans that urge America's return to whiteness. In 1868 presidential politics, the first presidential elections after the Civil War, Horatio Seymour ran using the slogan, "This is a white man's country. Let white men rule." Although he lost the election, nearly 150 years later, a man sailed to victory using the same slogan. And you know who that is. Make America Great Again, which for many people believe was a call to make America exactly white. Make America Great Again. And you know, one of the posters they show, I'm not sure if that was part of. Oh, no, this is a Caucasian named Rick Tyler for Congress. Make America White Again. You remember that? I think he was running down in Louisiana, and he had his poster had scenes of back when the Caucasians first came here, you know, looking over all the land they were going to steal, praying, all that kind of stuff, good family and so forth. Make America white again. This was a billboard that was put up around Louisiana. I think he was running for Congress in that congressional district. This form of racism impacts policy as well. Researchers from the University of Massachusetts tested Caucasian students to determine how closely they link Caucasianness with Americanness. They then asked the students to read hypothetical op-ed arguing that America should admit more skilled immigrants. The students were then told that the writer was either Caucasian or Asian. Because, you know, just saying, this is hypothetical, that America should admit more skilled immigrants. And the most skilled immigrants that they have been allowing into the country are Asians because of the high tech. And Indians from India. The students were then told that the writer was either Caucasian or Asian. The students who most closely connected whiteness to Americanness were most likely to reject the proposal when the writer was Asian.
So linking Caucasianness to American identity prevents Caucasians from hearing American Africans, Latinos, and American Asians in policy sphere. The need for Caucasians to conflagrate the American identity with Caucasianness had an impact on the presidency of Barack Obama, according to DeVos. People who had a difficulty dissociating with American identity with Barack Obama were less likely to express a willingness to vote for him. That's why, brothers and sisters, if you check the record, if only Caucasians would have voted, Barack Obama would have lost. He would have lost in 08, and he would have lost in 2012. If only Caucasians would have voted, he would have lost. Other researchers confirmed that not only did these persons not vote for him, they refused to support him. Dr. Eric Hellman of Rutgers University in Toronto surveyed Caucasians about their racial attitudes and their views of Barack's Americanness 1 year into his presidency. The study concluded that bias in viewing American Africans as less American than Caucasians appeared to implicitly underlie Caucasian negative evaluations of Obama's performance. The study concluded that bias in viewing just us as less American than Caucasians appeared to be explicitly underlined in Caucasians' negative evaluations. Just you couldn't do. And understand something, that was the majority of Caucasians. That's why they did not want to work with him in Congress. And then when he lost, because he had Congress, he had both houses when he came in 08. But in 2010, the whole thing shifted. The Tea Party and all this other rhetoric. And of course, he lost that. And then the battle for him consistently was against the House and the Senate and so forth. Another feat of this problem is the personal effect that Another facet of this problem is the personal effect it has on non-Caucasians. Americans that are not Caucasian are well aware that many Caucasians see them as less American. Dr. DeVos stated, the complexion of Caucasianness and Americanness manifests itself in all kinds of reactions or daily interactions. Members of ethnic minorities have to contend ethnic minorities. See, one thing you got to understand, because they want to perpetuate some democratic BS of majority rule. But if they don't have a majority, they still rule. They never had the majority in South Africa or in Namibia. See? They have the majority here, and that's by design, and they had the majority in some other places. But like, I just remember I did the piece on Brazil. Brazil's supposed to be a democratic society. The majority of the people in Brazil are Brazilian Africans. And then when they ended enslavement here and there in Brazil, a serious influx of Europeans, of European immigration into those countries to literally Caucasianize the country. Members of ethnic minorities have to contend routinely with the assumptions that they are not fully American, that they are second-class citizens. This is not a trivial or benign experience, in particular when it occurs frequently and across many domains of life. It is an insidious message that is pervasive yet hard to confront. It perpetuates marginalization. We will always be on the margins. They don't care. This is one last positive finding to note. Although Caucasians may be unwilling to view American African people and other people of color as their fellow Americans, non-Caucasians consider themselves patriotic. Perhaps American Africans, American Asians, and Latinos are pushing America to give the American identity a definition that includes fairness and justice and not just whiteness. has key attributes. What can be done to change the American identity? Dr. DeVos categorized this issue as complex and not yet fully understood. However, he did note that because of the definition of America is not fixed, change is possible. He noted that the fact that the country is becoming increasingly diverse and multicultural could change the implications of meanings of Americanness for future generations in a way that benefits non-Caucasians. However, he cautioned, at the same time, many other factors are likely to perpetuate inequalities and disparities between groups, making it challenging to consider in our minds that all groups making up the population are equally American. Because that will never happen. That will never happen. Now, I know that some of us want it to happen so bad that we pray, that we wish, that we hope, that we try to introduce legislation or vote or whatever means, because we're here in America. And some of us, just like I said earlier about Dr. Claude Anderson, because of the experience that we have here in America, and it will be 400 years in a couple years, 1619 to 2019, 400 years, I would hope, as that moment approaches, we do some serious analyzing, some serious thought, analysis, critical thinking about that 400 years and where we are. The fact that some of us think that because we are unique and all, there's another group of us who think that we are indigenous, that we are not American Africans, that we are not Africans, that we are, that we've been on this land, and this is just as much their land or our land or whoever who espoused to that than it is anybody's. And that, and understand something, I believe in reparations. I believe that we need to be repaired for the damage that has been done to us. But I also realize in looking at those who received compensation, who receive restitution, who, you know, I look at those situations and I say, they didn't get it right away. And they didn't get it being fragmented, fractured, divided. They didn't get it because they hated themselves and they hate each other and they're willing to kill themselves. No, they didn't get it like that. No, they got it because they became stronger as a people, more unified as a people. They began to do things economically. That's why in 1980, they gave reparations to the Japanese after bombing them, because Japanese became economically strong and they became very competitive. In fact, some of the things they started to do were so dynamic, particularly in electronics, TVs, stereos. In fact, there are no American companies anymore. That was even a Jeopardy question. You know, how many companies make VCRs and da-da-da? What is zero? Yeah. So they became honorary Caucasians. But he signed that, and the families who were detained, the families who were interned, the families whose possessions were taken, lives destroyed, were given compensation, as well as, of course, a Marshall Plan for Japan, like there was a Marshall Plan for Europe. Of course, the indigenous people who almost were extinct, and who still languish on reservations is just some of the indigenous people who made deals with America to build casinos. I know in Wisconsin they had three casinos, Potawatomi, the Potawatomi Nation, the Ho-Chunk Nation, and there's another one. It'll come to me. But they have Ho-Chunk, Oneida, the Oneida tribe. All three of those have casinos. And I know the Pequot in the Northeast, Foxwood. Wow, whew, Foxwood is huge. If you ever had a chance to go up there to Connecticut, Foxwood. And of course, there are some others in our West, you know. And so some of our people who claim that they, yes, they too are indigenous, and they want what the other indigenous people got. And understand something, too, as I say all the time, we have no friends. Look what happened when we were on the Trail of Tears, when Andrew Jackson finally came down into the Southeast, particularly into Florida, and forced the people out, forced them to walk westwardly in a thing they call the Trail of Tears. We were in that, too. We were called the Freedmen. And so we went into Oklahoma. In fact, the first settlement for us as a people really was Boley, Oklahoma. And then, of course, later the development of Tulsa, Oklahoma community called Black Wall Street, which is Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, which is, of course, the initials for the Gap Band, because they're out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Gap Band. And, of course, that one song they sung, You Dropped a Bomb on Me, because that's what America did. It dropped a bomb on them coming out after World War One. After World War One, they had the planes and they had dropped a bomb on that community and destroyed it. You know. So no, I have no faith at all. And Malcolm said it best, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Our problem is that our people don't look at history. We think about today, and of course we have no clue about tomorrow. But by looking at the history of the European and what has been done to us and why our situation is the way that it is, you know, it's going to be deep. It's going to be troubling. I have no faith at all that our situation as Africans here in America will be what we hope and pray that it should be, a place where we can live and love freely in, and our special talents can be appreciated, not just singing and dancing and athletics, but all our real talents. That is not going to happen. It's not in Caucasians to do that. Because their human development coming out of Europe, where the land and the weather and everything else is so harsh, causing them to develop a very sexist, greedy, evil, selfish mindset. There's a book by a Caucasian out of Canada named Michael Bradley, The Iceman's Inheritance. And explains that in that development, why the mentality is the way it is. Now, I saw a piece the other day on human development, and it talked about as Africans, our genetics withstood the test of time to defeat all the others, the Neanderthals and any other human group that began to develop. You know, that's a hypothesis. That's another hypothesis. That all of them are. You know, but let's just be real. There is evidence, physical evidence, to say this is this and that is that, tested over a long period of time. You know, tested over a long period of time. And I would say somewhat objectively, because I know that when the idea that the first human beings were African, Caucasians did not want that to happen. They had Peking man, Meltdown man, all kinds of stuff they were throwing into that. Trying to throw into that mix, but it couldn't stand up to the scrutiny. It couldn't stand up to the testing. And so as a consequence, it was out. And the idea of humanity first coming out of Africa has now been accepted pretty much by the scientific community. Just like climate change, it's pretty much been accepted by the scientific community. But can you get somebody and pay them and to say, no, that's not it, and try to debunk? Of course you can. Like I said, they didn't want, I mean, the idea that Caucasians came from us to many Caucasians is just too appalling. I remember having a discussion at the firehouse many, many years ago. And the Caucasians said, well, in an evolutionary sense, we evolved better then. I said, no, you didn't. I used to have some really fiery conversations in the firehouse. Because, you know, the fire service is the most racist occupation in public service. It is. Because of how firefighters have to work, is this, they did not want us in that atmosphere. Nepotism, cronyism is just rampant. Still today. All of that still today. You know. So pretty soon we're going to take us a break. We're going to come back. Going to read you a piece. From this piece is, where is this from? My info news, myinfonews.net. But how to tell if a Caucasian person is racist with one simple question. How to tell if a Caucasian person is racist with just one simple question. And so I'm going to throw that out there. And so you ponder that, and what do you think that one question would be to determine if a Caucasian person is racist or not? You know, and to be honest, they are, because if they weren't, it wouldn't exist. I used to say it all the time. I said, if Caucasians have the wherewithal to stop any ill within a society, if they wanted to. Hunger, homelessness, disease, bad health, all of those things, particularly here in America. America particularly. But because of entrenched, deep-seated racism, because, you know, like, I know listening, that we cannot be racist. We can be mean-spirited, we can be bigoted, we can be prejudiced, we can be hateful, spiteful, all those kinds of things, but we can't be racist, because racism is a power dynamic. And we don't have the power to prevent anybody from doing anything that they want, particularly Caucasians. But see, they have the power to do that to us. So that's why the issue of racism is real. And as I call it, European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. So we're going to take this break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to deal with that. And so you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Feeling lost in a haze. that stays in focus is that smile on your face.
Woman of color, down to the bone, ageless in beauty, my queen on the throne. Tell me the secret of the ways that you move. Help me draw closer to the woman in you.
Honey-colored sister with unspeakable eyes, sharply coated beauty as dark as the night. Coffee with a splash of cream is the color you are. There can be no explanation how you've come so far.
Woman of color, at the end of the road, I brush up against you in some unspoken code. I yearn for the closeness we are so overdue. Show me the garden of pleasure in you.
Brown skin lady, so hard to ignore. A portrait of sweetness I have to explore. As soft as the measure of the love that you give.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on Motherland Media Network, on TimeForAnAwakening.com and BlackTalkRadio.com. You've listened to
Brother Phil Taylor, and featuring Will Perry. And I know if you heard him, you know it's distinct. That's Scotty from the Whispers. Scotty Scott from the Whispers. And praising our dear sisters, our beloved sisters. You know, that's one thing for me. I love us. And I love our sisters. And it can be light, bright, and damn near white to blue, black. I love African women. I love African people. And I'm hoping that this program helps you understand that you should love them too. So once again, if you want to join this conversation, you can dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832 is the call-in number for timeforanawakening.com for this program and the other programs that appear on this network. And they are, of course, this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, or 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you can't listen live, you can go to the archives for previous recorded programs on time. Because, you know, they stream 24/7, so that's what I'm saying. So if you ain't doing nothing, you're just driving along, you don't want to hear no more music, or you don't want to hear the rhetoric that's on the radio, then download the free app. Tune in on your cell phone or your tablets or any other mobile device. And when you go to tune in, when you got it up, search Time for an Awakening. Make that your favorite. Hit that. And who knows who might be Elliot, Brother Elliot might be talking to. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard might be talking to. It's outstanding. So this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And on Wednesday tonight, Revive with the host POC, Proof of Consciousness. That's a young sister, for the millennials. She has a very live program. She has a very upbeat personality, strong sister. So check her out, and she's on Wednesdays from 8 to 10. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics. So like we got to say family economics, pulling our resources together to do for ourselves. With Brother DJ, Baba Kambizi, and Baba Akima. That's 9 p.m. tomorrow night. Check them out. Learn more about it. On Friday, after my program airs in the afternoon, Brother Elliot is up on Friday evenings with Time for an Awakening at 8, from 8 to about 11. Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, Time for an Awakening. On Saturdays, SST, that's Saturday Sports Talk, SST, with your host, Brother Troy Wilmore. And that is from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And then Saturday afternoon, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Sunday, our sister's back with that spirit, that positive spirit, Revive with POC. And that is Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, Time for an Awakening, from 7 p.m. to about 10 p.m. So check out timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com for these programs. Yeah. Okay, I was going to read this piece here so we can give some discussion on what we've talked about today. How to tell if a Caucasian person is a racist with one simple question. And I'm quite sure you already know what that question is. Do you support reparations for African people who have been dogged out here in America? And of course, the vast majority of Caucasians do not. They do not. The vast majority of Caucasians do not support reparations. And let me say this, because we've been so indoctrinated and so whitewashed that a majority of our people, last poll I seen, they don't support reparations. They don't support reparations. Now, seen a skit, Dave Chappelle. In fact, you can probably go to YouTube and look up Dave Chappelle's skit on reparations. He is a newscaster. He's at the desk. Of course, he looks trying to look white with the wig and so forth, the makeup. And he has a reporter out there, and people are lined up to get their check. That people are lined up, and the check has in place. People are lined up to buy this, buy that, and then they go to a person who's a reporter at the stock market. Stocks are high. GM stock is off the roof because of the sale of Cadillacs. you know, jewelry, so forth. You know, there's a Caucasian columnist. I'm not sure if he's in Washington Post or New York Times. Charles Kuttheimer, if you know or heard of him. I'm not sure which news agency he's with today, newspaper he's with today. But he's a columnist. Like, you, in your local paper, you get, in your editorial section, you get various opinions of right wing, left wing, whatever. And sometimes you see the opinions that are from people across the nation. And so Charles Kuttheimer was in there one time in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, which is a daily paper. And of course, where I read the paper at was at the firehouse. I go to the firehouse, I go to work, and I would get the paper of that day and the ones that happened the day before. And then the next day, if I worked one day on, 2 days off, so you could see, I read the paper pretty much every day that week, you know, because I get the paper the day that I go in, the paper of the previous day, and of course, the day when I go off the next day, I read that paper. So Charles Kuttheimer's editorial was said, we should give reparations. We should give them reparations. Threw out a number like 40,000 a family of whatever number, 20,000 an individual. You know, we should give them reparations because really, we know, to me, and this is his article, to me, he's saying, that we really done it already. We've gave them affirmative action. We gave them welfare, you know, other social so we really get, but let's just do this. Give them reparations. And the reason why at this very moment, give them reparations, and that was like, I don't know how long ago that was. I bet you when I read that, it was about 30 years ago. Easy now. Because I've been gone from the fire department 11 years. 11 years I've been gone. And so he said, because of the mindset that they have, we'll get that money right back. They have no sense of being collective. They're not going to pull those resources to improve the community, to build businesses. They're not going to do that. They're going to buy cars, clothes, jewelry, might buy a house. Maybe. They're going to adorn themselves. We're going to get that money right back. It's going to be a big stimulus package, just like that piece that was on Dave Chappelle. When I watched it, I didn't laugh. Because to me, it ain't funny. And of course, you know who I blame for this whole mess. That's right, y'all. And I will always blame Caucasians for this whole mess. Now, I blame us for not developing the mindset to get us out of this mess. Because that is our responsibility. I blame us for not trusting one another. I look at it like this, just as I've mentioned many times before about what Caucasians have said about us historically, particularly coming out of our enslavement, that we had no culture to speak of, that we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind, of any note. Now, we know that is not true today. We know the great work that Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop did and Dr. Theophilo Obenga has done. We know the great work that our other scholars, our warrior scholars and historians have done. Brother Renoka Rashidi, documenting the African prisons globally. We know this good work. But still today, because Caucasians suffer from cognitive dissonance and Caucasian fragility, still today, they deny us of who we are, our humanity and our dignity, and relegate us and marginalize us. So to them, we have done nothing. In fact, to them, we should be thankful. We should be thankful that what we did. In fact, I throw Claude Anderson in that damn mix. He's thanking Caucasians for taking us out of Africa and doing to us what they've done to us. Now, there was an American African that did write a book about that. His name was Richburg, I believe it was. I don't remember the title. It was many years ago. And it just sickened me that he was thankful that Europeans enslaved us because it exposed us to Western ideology, culture, religion, and so forth, and took us out of that evil, dark Africa, that savage Africa. What a job these folks have done on us. But in saying that, the most deep saying of those things that I present in my presentation I do on that is what Henry Barry of the Virginia House of Representatives had to say. He said, we have closed off every avenue by which light may enter the captive's mind. And if we can extinguish the capacity to see the light, they will be as the beast of the fields and we will be safe. We have closed off every avenue by which knowledge and information can come into them to liberate them, to make them stand strong. We've closed all that off from them. We forbid them. We will punish them. We will even kill them to seek that knowledge, to read and so forth. We've closed all that off. But now, what's even deeper, if we can make them not want to know, and if we can make them reject those who bring it to you, now I know we got you. We got you. And that's what we are in today. The information to liberate our minds, to develop the consciousness that we need to have, is right at your damn fingertip. If you don't want to pick up a book, which I suggest that you do, then go online. Turn off the damn TV. Go online. Go to YouTube and you can hear the ancestors speak and the contemporaries. The information is there. If that's what you want to do, whatever, how you want to do it, you want to listen to this program, because every Monday and Wednesday, that's what you're going to get. When you listen to this program every Monday and Wednesday, what you're going to get is the praise of who you are and who you must still be. The praise of who you were, the praise of who you are, and the praise of who you will still be. Although I say what I say, and I say it in a way that some may argue, well, man, that's very pestilent. No, it's not. I'm telling this bad so we can understand the part of the beginning of the good for us. I am not pessimistic. Honestly, I am optimistic. I believe in us. I understand and I know our history. I know what we are capable of. Unfortunately, we've been whitewashed. We suffer from the Urugu, my dear friend, Dr. Mamuma Ani's great work, which I consider the Bible, which is the book that really helped me understand, along with Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, the understanding of the dynamics of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. Ani's book, Urugu, which is subtitled An African-Centered Critique of European Cultural Thought and Behavior. And so, to me, we suffer from the Urugu virus. Or my good friend, Brother Teju. I'm going to get Brother Teju on. Teju is a multi-talented brother out of Milwaukee. Just a great brother. He said, we suffer from white-itis. We got white-itis. But we do. We are afflicted. We have been impacted with a disease of the mind. And that's why this program exists every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. In fact, this network, not just the Motherland Media Network and what we present and what we brought to Time for an Awakening, but for Time for an Awakening and what it presents, and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com, what it presents is about changing the attitudes and the minds of our people. If you want to quickly determine if a Caucasian person in the United States is comfortably racist, I recommend a single question. Ask them, should our nation pay reparations to American African people for the enslavement, mistreatment, and economic exploitation of them and their ancestors over the past 400 years? If they immediately reject this proposal, you can be fairly confident you've identified a comfortable racist. On the other hand, if they're willing to give this question serious consideration, you probably identified an ethically responsible and radically conscious Caucasian person. It's really that simple. There is simply no compelling argument against the payment of reparations. I repeat, there is simply no compelling argument against the payment of reparations. Just like every other thing that I read, I always make some comments here or there. And of course, you know that the United Nations study recommendation after the study that the United States should pay reparations to African descendants here in America for what has happened to African people, because the United Nations stated, it has been affirmed, that the Atlantic enslavement of African people are crimes against humanity. And there is no statute of limitations on crimes against humanity. Just like murder, there is no statute of limitation on murder. You see, even today, they still find somebody who murdered somebody 30 years ago and bring them to justice. I just seen one the other day with the, when they're talking about the clowns and how scary, you know, it clown, that kind of thing. And that was LeBron. LeBron was that clown the other day, yesterday, for Halloween, for dress up. But this woman, this dude and his wife, she liked clowns. And I don't know if it was her birthday or whatever, but he was in relationship to this one lady who dressed as a clown. And she went to that woman's house as a clown, handed her a balloon, handed her some flowers, pulled out a gun, and shot and killed her. Well, of course, you know, they said it was a clown, but hey, she got in the car and she drove away. Some years later, that man whose wife was killed and that lady who shot his wife got together. And they were together for many years, many decades, till finally they put it all together. And through DNA testing or whatever, something happened. They found her and they brought her to justice. And to me, that was cool. Once again, there is simply no compelling argument against the payment of reparations. The studies and research have been done. The historians, economists, and ethicists have spoken. While there can and should be considerable debate over how reparations should be made, any Caucasian person who argues against reparations is either ignorant, immoral, racist, or all of the above. This is, this article is from myinfonews.net, and this article is written by a Caucasian. The article is written by a Caucasian. Additionally, if you encounter someone opposed to paying reparations, you can be fairly certain that they will offer one of all the following three arguments. One argument: I have no responsibility, neither are my ancestors owned slaves. Though I doubt most of these people have the genealogical support for their claim, such evidence would be irrelevant. The economic advantages of enslavement were not limited to owners or captors. Once again, I don't use the word slave. So I don't use the word slave because we were not slaves. We were captives. I definitely don't use the word masters. Okay? See, let me just explain this again for our listeners. I may have to do this a number of times, and I don't care. If we say words matter, and in this language that is not ours, that we have no control over, but words matter, we also understand that when the word is said, it puts a picture in your mind. There is no doubt about it. If I walked into a room, and it could be just us, and it doesn't matter the age. Doesn't matter the age. It could be from an elder to a very young person. Very young person, I mean somebody who's like, you know, of reasoning age. I ain't talking about somebody who's faux. I'm talking about somebody who's like 10, 12, 14. Okay. And I say the word slave. I would say to them, close your eyes. And I'm going to say these words. If I say to them, close your eyes, and I'm going to say these words, and then you be honest and you tell me whose face did you put on these words, I would say welfare, drug dealer, drug addict, no fit father, absent father, no fit mother, crack, slave. And I could use more words, but you understand what I'm saying. And then I say, open your eyes. Now, be honest. Tell me, whose face did you put on those words? Because that's what America has done. America has done that to us. That's why I'm saying to you, words matter. That's why, to me, when you should use the proper words to this. So I'm not calling these crackers master. They're captors. I could give you some other more deeper adjectives, but they're captors. And we are the captured. They're not masters. I doubt that most of you have a genealogical support of their claims. Such evidence would be irrelevant. The economic advantages of enslavement were not limited to captors. Though the highest concentration of millionaires in the United States in 1840, the highest concentration of millionaires in 1840 was the Mississippi Valley. The wealth created by captive flowed north to the textile mills, banks, and ultimately to every Caucasian family. Cotton was the single greatest economic driver in early American history. Without the millions of hours of working from can't see in the morning to can't see at night, hours of captive labor provided by American African people, the American economy would not have thrived. The influence generated by this labor, though unevenly divided amongst the Caucasian population, was limited to the Caucasian people. You didn't have to be a captor to benefit from the enslavement of African people. You only had to be Caucasian. Indeed, the recognition of this reality fueled the strong Southern support for defending during the Civil War, for defending that institution during the Civil War. Though only a quarter of Southern Caucasians actually owned or actually were captor of our labor, all of them were keenly aware of the benefits that they produced. Indeed, at the time of the Civil War, captives constitute a single greatest financial asset in the United States. I repeat, indeed, at the time of the Civil War, captives constituted the single greatest financial asset in this country. While it is certainly possible to argue that some Caucasian people benefited more from captivity than others, for African captivity than others, it is difficult to argue that even the poorest Caucasian person has received no benefit. And it is irrefutable that the chief producers of all of this immense wealth, African people, receive absolutely no financial benefit for their labor. More damning, in 1865, when they were freed from legal bondage, they were paid no back wages. Most African people were left so destitute that they quickly became sharecroppers, which is often even more economically oppressive than enslavement. Go to Google or whatever search you put in and put in Callie House, Sister Callie House. Once enslavement was over, she understood the labor that we had endured, the enslavement that we had endured, the captivity that we had endured, and she said, this government owes us. She called it, quote, slave pensions. And she wrote to the government. She put information out there. She had to get other brothers and sisters and even asked them to try. So basically what happened, of course, is that they got her on some mail fraud BS. And they imprisoned Sister Callie House. How dare you ask, even ask us for some compensation? How dare you? It's just like how I look at this flag situation. How dare you kneel at our flag? How dare you? When we pay you all this money to entertain us, how dare you try to bring something to our attention while we want to enjoy the game about you getting shot and killed in the streets of this country? How dare you? That's how I look at it. For these reasons, the huge disparities in accumulated wealth and economic status between Caucasian people and American African people today have their roots in this historic injustice. Those who argue against reparations because they are or their ancestors didn't own anybody are like the people who fill their homes with property they know was stolen from others. Yeah, and people do that, don't they? They fill their house and you got some on the low. Yeah, okay. They may not be thieves, but they are hardly examples of responsibility and integrity. When forced to face this reality, they usually offer this argument. That was wrong, but it was a long time ago, and I haven't directly benefited from racial injustice. Once you've established the incurable injustice of the past, we have two choices. If we're ethical Caucasian people, which they're not, we take responsibility for the injustices of our ancestors, which they will never do. If you're immoral and racist, we throw our ancestors under the bus. We argue for our innocence and blamelessness. We pretend the oppression of African people ended in 1865. We ignore the evidence that most Caucasian people living today have directly benefited from racial injustice. Well, if you set up the country and these are, then you're going to benefit. And if you are exploiting people, taking stuff, I mean, when you're doing what you have done, you're going to benefit. And the fact is that they're greedy and selfish and they don't want to share. They're greedy and selfish. We got a caller. We have a caller on the line. 267 area code. 267, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie, Brother Ralph.
Hey, Brother Ralph, how are you doing, dear brother?
I'm fine, man. Just want to let you know that I was listening and agree with a lot of stuff you're saying.
Appreciate it.
But I have to, you know, sadden you a little bit. I sort of agree with Claude Anderson, and I know exactly where he was coming from on that tip.
Okay.
And let me explain myself.
Okay.
You know, I'm seeing what's coming off that continent, Brother Oshie. Those people, they want to take a part of this system. They want a lot of them. I'm saying a huge majority of them want no parts of me and you. They might mess over our women because I've known some sisters that have messed with some of those. Brothers, I'll call them brothers and sisters since they're the same complexion as I am. But, man, you know, Brother Oshie, I don't want to identify or even unify with nobody with that type of mentality.
I agree with you.
And, you know,
I know, I agree with you.
I don't even want to call myself nothing like that. Because, you know, I look at some of those guys, man. I listen to them. I see how they mess with our women. I see the way their women treat our women when I want to go in there and get their hairs braided and all that. Man, look, that's why I don't call myself one. You know what I mean? I'm just only speaking for myself. Now, I know that is the mother continent. That's where we came from. But, man, look, I understand exactly what Claude Anderson was saying. You know, we have a distinct, even though we came at the slaughter of our ancestors and the mistreatment of our ancestors by, I'm gonna call anybody that does that to another person these demons. You know what I mean? That's my word for demons. Anytime you treat a person like they treated our ancestors, you're nothing more than a demon. So, but on the same token, I don't know what carnage they left over there in the motherland to make these people come off that continent and, you know, and basically try to look down on us. And I heard you and Brother Paul talking, man. It was good to hear that, brother. I hear him on another radio station.
Okay.
And I love to find out what's going on with our brothers and sisters over in England. I was over there in the 80s, and I just found it quite strange. Some of the stuff that I saw, and then when I hear this brother who is conscious call your program, I was sort of shocked because what I saw over there, they weren't like that in the 80s. But I guess they're getting fed up too, where they have to embrace some kind of sovereignty thinking and some kind of conscious thinking the same way we should.
Right.
You're
right.
You know, the same way we should. And those are the only people that I want to identify with, Benoshi. Those of us who have that sovereign thinking, that have, you know, because I look at Facebook, I look at my family members and stuff like that, man, and I see them, and you know, we have been beaten up, not only spiritually and emotionally, where we're almost beaten down.
Yeah.
But we have to, like, get that kind of thinking where we can unify with each other that had that kind of thinking. Do you understand what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying,
Ralph, is that when I speak about this, there is a process that needs to take place on the continent and throughout the diaspora to recognize our humanity has won. You know, there is only, in my estimation, there is really only one salvation for African people, and that is African people uniting, coming together, being on a land that is their own, working that land, building on that land, educating its people, particularly its offspring, into the realization of who we are and controlling that. There is nothing that is going to happen here for us collectively. Now, individually, there's always going to be somebody who will benefit, and of course, the system will hold that individual up to the rest of us to see if you like him, see what you or her, you can see what you can do. But the reality is we will always be a second class citizen to these folks who run this. And believe me, they are not giving up an inch, because what I'm reading to you in this article is a Caucasian person who wrote this article about reparations. You know, this Caucasian understands and he gets it. Or she gets it, uh-huh. Give me a name. But the reality is our problem is also on the continent, because reparations is owed to the brothers and sisters on the continent for Europe's exploitation, number one, of removing us, and then number two, of colonization. And the reason why we act and behave the way we do here in this country and over there is because of the imposition of Europeans. The colonization process was deep, brother, as you know. You know, so the divide and conquer, which is, of course, the old method, which is a tried and true method that Caucasians have used consistently, particularly amongst us. They've told them, oh, you're better than they are. You know, and they told us, you're better than they are. The reality is, I don't want us to listen to crackers for nothing. But I'm serious. I don't want us to listen. I don't even want to discuss nothing with them, debate anything with them, because there is nothing.
Yeah.
You know, the whole energy that we need to display is unifying our people, trying to come together, working out whatever petty difference, because believe me, they are petty. The differences that are amongst our people are petty. Working these things out, coming to the understanding that we must come together, pull our resources, and do for ourselves. We're not a poor people, but yet in the world, the image of us is poor. Just like that's why the words I use, Ralph, that's me, because I understand how important and how powerful words are in a society. That's why I don't use the word slave, because we were not slaves. Number one, it doesn't even fit the damn description of who we are and what we were about.
Enslaved. You know? Enslaved.
If you want to use that one, okay. Because the bottom line is, the bottom line is, a slave is somebody or something that submits. We never submitted. We fought. We fought on a continent. We fought in the Middle Passage. We fought in this hemisphere. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting. So no, we are not slaves. We were captives. And all the time that we want to do was get free and to be free from them.
I got a question for you. What about Dave Clark then? What is he?
Dave Clark?
What is Clark?
The sheriff?
The sheriff out of Milwaukee. and Clarence Thomas. They submit their will. I mean, what the hell? Come on. And these quarantine people like Reverend Al.
You know,
I mean, come on. We all know what Reverend Al is, but a lot of us want to play dumb.
Well,
we know what that guy is.
Well,
he has his own FBI number.
Well, there's always opportunists. There's always individuals that will present a face to us, like Al and Jesse and so forth, will present a face to us of wanting to help us, but all the time it's all about helping themselves. But then there are some who are just so offensive. Now, if you want to call them coons, you want to call them Uncle Tom's, you want to call them traitors, they're white, whatever you want to call them. But the bottom line, that these individuals, men and women, who have so deeply bought into the idea of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege, because that's who they wish they were. Because that's how deeply ingrained the self-hatred is. Because I know David Clark.
Man.
You know? And I know the kind of... Go ahead, Ralph.
But those are the ones that I'm more careful with. When I'm talking to the other folk, I know who and what they are.
Right.
I know how they're thinking it.
Right.
But the ones that we really sometimes, and I heard you and Brother Paul very well, we are each other's worst enemies. No, we are each other's worst enemies. I agree with you. But some of us, you have to be very, very careful with, Brother Oshie.
Oh, there's no doubt.
When we're out there trying to provide a life for our families, trying to do the best we can under these conditions. You have to watch them. And that's why I have an understanding. I know who the other people are. I know the arrogance of them. Like, I dare you kneel on a football field taking millions of dollars just because your innocent sons and daughters are being killed. That self-righteous, arrogant attitude, I know what I'm dealing with there.
Right on.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's something, that's just who they are, and we can't change them. But we got to reach those of us who understand. And we got to come, sometimes we got to come down to their level just to hope they understand. And my thing is, when you get enough pain, then you might understand. You know what I mean? And some of us just reckon, you know, I mean, I just have a different way of thinking. A lot of times I look at what Martin Luther King said. I look at the character of a man.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I look at that character. I just don't look at a person, oh, that's my brother.
No,
I look at that character very, and then I know what I'm dealing with.
Right, because it's not what you say. Because it's not what you say, it's what you do. And, of course, you know.
Yes, sir.
You know, actions speak louder than words. Yeah.
Right, but I just called in to let you know I'm listening.
Right on, brother.
And a good program, man. You know, I just hope the word get out more.
Oh yeah,
that you're on the air, and sooner or later they'll see what you're saying. I'm not into calling like coons and crackers. I just don't go there.
Yeah.
I just let your actions speak for yourself.
Right on.
You know what I mean?
I hear you.
So,
bro.
You know, I said I grew kindergarten a long time ago. When they call me that, when they want to call me the N word and this, that, and the other, I said, you know what? I grew kindergarten a long time ago. And they don't call me that to my face, but I know they call it. You know, they say those things around the dinner table.
Sure they do.
You know what I mean?
Sure, they do.
Yeah. That's the average word around the dinner table. Yeah. So I understand that. So the thing is, you're trying to get our folk to understand what they're dealing with.
Exactly.
And I appreciate that, bro.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you for listening. And really, thank you for helping us get on to Time for an Awakening. You're the catalyst, and I appreciate that. And I'll always remember that, Brother Ralph. I appreciate you for that. Okay?
Yes, sir. So I'm going to go back on mute.
All right, my brother. Peace to you.
Peace, man.
Yeah, that's my good brother, Brother Ralph. He was listening to me when we were on Blog Talk, and he had Elliot listen, and Elliot contacted me, and then I listened to Time for an Awakening, and I said, yeah, we need to be on that program. That sounds great, and it sounds fantastic, and so here we are, and definitely we're very happy to be here. And I hope that you are happy with us being here. As lucrative as slavery was, our ancestors weren't the greatest beneficiaries of the oppression of African people. The single greatest economic increase in American wealth was not in the 1800s. It happened in the years after the Second World War. Between 1950 and 1970, billions and billions of dollars of wealth were created. Indeed, this period marked the high water mark of American middle class. A vast majority of this wealth was intentionally limited by the government policy for Caucasian people. If you are Caucasian and bought a home or grew up in a home purchased between 1934 and 1977, you were likely benefited from the government's programs that awarded millions of tax dollars solely to Caucasian people. If you inherited a home purchased during those years, you reaped the spoils of racial injustice. If you, your parents, or grandparents went to college between 1944 and 1964, you likely benefited from the government programs that excluded African people from millions of dollars in educational grants. If you, your parents, or grandparents have received Social Security benefits, you have likely benefited from a program that initially excluded up to 64% of all African people. It is difficult to find a single government policy between 1877, when the Reconstruction period ended, and 1977, that didn't give preferential treatment to Caucasian people or exclude American African people. You know, I always maintain that we shouldn't pay Social Security because we don't live long enough to collect it. And who lived the longest? Caucasian women. That's right. Caucasian women has always been Caucasian women have been beneficiaries of all our misery. As African people, particularly men, you know, we put all the money into Social Security and we died, and Caucasian women lived to be like 80, you know, yeah, or plus. Indeed, most Caucasian people today are recipients of one of the greatest governmental affirmative action programs in history. Between 1934 and 1977, billions of tax dollars were funneled exclusively or primarily to Caucasian people. Since any argument for equality would require an equal distribution of this government largesse, we can fairly say that the greatest recipients of racial injustice are not long dead slave owners, but middle class Caucasian people today. So the greatest recipients of racial injustice are not the captors, but the so-called middle class of Caucasian people today. When forced to face this reality, those who oppose reparations usually default to more obvious racist rhetoric. You know, when in a society of deep inequity, of just ridiculous inequity, when you look at the inequity is so deep, and I've said this many times because I read it and seen it again a number of times, says the equity is so deep that if Caucasians' incomes and money were frozen, it would take almost 230 years to equal to come up to be equal to what they have. It would take over 230 years of incremental raises that would now be equal economically with Caucasians. That's crazy. Because when they say middle class for Caucasians, it's not the same for us, y'all. The middle class for us might be 70, 80,000. For them, it's 160. It's always damn near double. Let us be real about the things that this program and this network, the Motherland Media Network with Time for an Awakening, what we espouse, what we're promoting, what we are saying. Let's be real about this. Well, there wasn't fair, but what can you do? You can't just give black people cash. They just waste it. Or some other generally disparaging remark about American African people. But I told you, Charles Cutheimer said in an article, yeah, give them the cash. Give them $40,000. At that time, that was, like I said, about 30-some years ago. Give them whatever the amount of money is, family. Whatever that amount of money is, and individually, we're going to get it right back. And what is? And let me say this. 30-some years ago, that was for show. But you know what? It's still that way today. In fact, 30-some years ago, we probably were more collectively minded people than we are today. Today, we all over the damn place. So, Brother Ralph, I love you, man, but I just can't, I understand what he's saying, but how he said it, you need to go get that. You need to go look up. It's an interview with Tariq Nasheed. The brother Tariq Nasheed is the brother that did Hidden Colors. So maybe you might want to go to YouTube and first check out Tariq Nasheed interview with Dr. Claude Anderson. And the fact that he says it the way he says it just was, I don't know, it hurt me. It really did. You know, I've seen Claude Anderson. In fact, when I mentioned this Monday, on Monday's program, Claude Anderson really owes me some money because he was at our conference in New Orleans, the Black Firefighters Training Program, and somebody invited him in, and in a presentation that he did, prior to his speaking on that Saturday after the graduation, he said, somebody give me a definition of racism. And boy, you know, that's up my alley. I was like, I was waving my hand. And I gave him what Dr. Francis Cress Welsing said, what Dr. Bobby Wright said, what Milana Karinga said. Now I'm paraphrasing all three, but I'm pretty much to the point because I've been doing it for 40 some years. And he dissed me. In fact, the brothers and sisters, yeah, Brother Oshie. But anyway, okay, well, that wasn't fair, but what can we do? You just can't give black people cash. They just waste it. Or some other generally disparaging remark about American African people. Once we've established the incredible injustice of the presence, we have two choices. Either we're ethical Caucasian people, we take responsibility for the injustices of our present system and seek to rectify them. If we're immoral and racist, we throw American African people under the bus. In arguing for their inadequacy and incompetency, we verify our ancestry. Like our forefathers, we justify the oppression of African people with the same paternal racist rhetoric. We miss the obvious. Once we've acknowledged that the resources were stolen, what they do with any compensation is irrelevant. It's their money. How reparations are paid shouldn't be up to Caucasian people. I can't imagine any court in the land that would leave the terms of compensation up to their thieves. What we must do as a country is determine an appropriate amount of compensation for the damages done to generations of American African people. There's going to be expenses. It's going to be expensive, and it should be. The debt needs to be paid back with interest. It's time for Caucasian people who are ethically responsible and racially conscious to voice our support for the payment of reparations. It's time for, he says, our nation, because it is their nation. I wouldn't say our. I never say our nation. It's time for our nation to finally pay its debt
to American African people upon whose backs we built the most prosperous nation in human history. It's time to ask American African people to tell us how they want us to make these payments. It's far past time. And when some Caucasian people complain of injustice of it all, we who are ethnically responsible and racially conscious must identify that opposition for what it has been and always will be, racist and immoral. I'm going to tell you, most crackers would say that Caucasian's crazy. He's crazy. Because they ain't giving up nothing. I understand the article. I understand what that man was saying. But the reality is the majority of Caucasians, because of the idea that they have established coming out of Europe and the awakening they had of Europe, the belief that they were superior and that God ordained them to give them the manifest destiny to go out there and subdue the world, to bring it under European control and dominance. That mindset, that's why you can have religious people, the so-called religious right, the evangelicals who believe in God, who believe Jesus, but yet will continue to heap dehumanizing and vicious laws and practices on other human beings who they feel are outside of them. That's why you need to read Dr. Marimba Ani's book, Urugu, so you'll get a clear understanding who this Caucasian is and why he is the way that he is and how it affects us. Because of what he has done, look at what we are doing to ourselves because of what he has done to us. No, we are not our own worst enemies. Our enemy, our worst enemy is the Caucasian, not who, and let me get this straight because I don't have very much time. There's a saying, white supremacist. Let me say this. I'm getting angry about this too. A white supremacist is not some cracker walking down the street with a tiki torch talking about, you know, they will not read. No, the white supremacist is the system itself. It's the president, the legislator, the judges, the business people who maintain control and dominance. That's white supremacy. They are the white supremacists. The other Caucasians may spout some kind of nationalism, but no, that's what white supremacy is. It is a system of defamation, denial, and destruction of a people's history and culture and right to freedom based primarily on a false concept. Race is not even a real concept. And they've done it. They created it. No, that's what white supremacy is. It's not, you know, these white supremacists. No, all of them. The people who run the industries. It's in every facet of human activity, as Dr. Francis Cress Welsing stated, in sex, in politics, in education, entertainment, you name it, religion, all of it. This Friday, I hope to be broadcasting to you from Los Angeles. I will be in Los Angeles for the celebration of the American African Firefighters Museum, one of the great museums there. I'll be part of the program. We in this program, like we in every program here on African Perspectives, with the words of Stephen Biko, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep, go in peace. Asante Sana. Thank you. See you on Friday. Have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.